नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय मुहूर्तम अभवद् घोष्टम् रजसा तमसावृतम् सुतं यशोदा न पश्यत् तस्मिन् यस्तवति यतः मुहूर्तम्. For a moment, the whole pasturing ground was overcast with dense darkness from the dust storm. And Mother Yashoda was unable to find her son where she had placed him. Napasyat kaschanat manam param chapi vimohita trinavarta nishishtabhi Sharkarabhir upadrutaha. Because of the bits of sand thrown about by Trinavarta, people could not see themselves or anyone else, and thus they were illusioned and disturbed. Iti karapavana chakrapam suvarse sutta padavim abala vilakshyamata ati karunam anusmarantya sochan bhuvi patita mritavats vatsakayatago. Because of the dust storm stirred up by the strong whirlwind, Mother Yashoda could find no trace of her son, nor could she understand why. Thus she fell down on the ground like a cow who had just lost her calf and began to lament very pitifully. Ruditam anu nesayam yatatra gopyo brisham anu taptadiyo shupurna mukya Rurudur anupalabhya nandasunam pavan uparta pamshuvarsha vege. When the force of the dust storm and the wind subsided, Yashoda's friends, the other gopis, approached Mother Yashoda, hearing her pitiful crying. Not seeing Krishna present, they too felt very much aggrieved and joined Mother Yashoda in crying, their eyes full of tears. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This attachment of the gopis to Krishna is wonderful and transcendental. The center of all the activities of the gopis was Krishna. When Krishna was there, they were very happy. And when Krishna was not there, they were unhappy. Thus, when Mother Yashoda was lamenting Krishna's absence, the other ladies also began to cry. Today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 7, entitled The Killing of the Demon Trinavarta, Text 23, 22 through 25. In this particular verse, 25, there is a very deep,
profound illustration of the nature of oneness from the perspective of pure, unalloyed bhakti. Yashodamayi, the mother of Krishna, was inflicted with such grief because she did not understand that Krishna was the cause of all causes, the father, the mother of all living beings, the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of all existence. She had already realized that, but for her that was like basic arithmetic. To understand the greatness of God is a very fundamental level of spiritual knowledge. But when love awakens, and that love is so intimate, Krishna wants to enjoy and give us the enjoyment of much higher, sweeter levels of spiritual experience. Therefore, by the power of Yoga Maya, Krishna covers his greatness. And how does he cover his greatness? It's not exactly an illusion. Rather, the higher truth of Krishna's beauty, Krishna's madhurya, his transcendental sweetness, Krishna's playfulness, Krishna's intimacy is revealed to such an extent that the power and majesty of God moves aside. It's like if you have a feast and there's such a wonderful, wonderful preparation on your plate that's so nice and there's so much of it. And then there's something you like, but you know, it's all right. You kind of forget about it because there's something so much higher, so much more enjoyable. So it's not that Krishna is ever without his supreme powers. But yegatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna reveals himself according to the nature of our love, the nature of our surrender. So we find even such great sannyasis and powerful yogis and scholars, how they give the highest reverence to Yashodamayi and the gopis because the nature of their love. If you understand Krishna to be supreme, then you can't from your heart think that you can control Krishna, conquer Krishna, chastise Krishna. But Yashodamayi was doing all those things. She was thinking, Krishna's completely dependent on me. He's a helpless baby. And even if he displayed such incredible supernatural powers as a little baby, still the nature of her motherly love is, it must have been God protecting him. He can't do it. Putana, when she came to destroy little Krishna, how is it that she died? It must be because we are pious, and little Krishna's pious, that God protected. That is the consciousness. So this oneness we find not only between a devotee and the Lord, but where there's, to the degree there's love for Krishna, devotees become one with each other in the sense of their concern, their feeling, one through love. It does not mean that our identities are merged. It means our love, just like so many rivers flowing into the ocean. Still, the water is its own distinct nature of water, but they are all together in the ocean. So in the same way, the love from the hearts of all the devotees when they meet the ocean of Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, then there's a deep oneness, oneness in purpose, oneness in spirit. So we find in this particular story, Krishna was 1 year old. He had just become 1 year in age. And Yashodamai was playing with him on her lap. And how she played, so much like any mother plays with a child. She would take Krishna and she would pick him up from under his arms and throw him in the air and then catch him. Have any of you ever seen mothers doing that to their babies? In fact, you may not remember, but your mother did it to you. Just throwing, and Krishna goes up in the air, and he's, and then she catches him right before he lands on her lap. And then Krishna laughs and smiles, and she does it again and again and again. It's only to make the child happy. Because love means the happiness of the object of love is our love. When a loving mother throws her child in the air and catches, the child laughs. She's actually doing it for him or her because it makes the child happy. And what makes the child happy is what brings the mother the highest happiness. That is love. Love is selfless. The example of watering the root of the tree automatically, that goes to every part of the tree, the nourishment. So when we make Krishna happy, that is our greatest happiness. Because we are part of Krishna. So in this way, Yashodamai was playing with Krishna in such an ordinary, typical way. And yet this is the highest perfection of the supreme state of yoga. Yes? One needs special grace of God to understand this principle. That sometimes yogis, they perform lifetimes of severe yogic discipline to get some powers. And sometimes they could do things very, very difficult. They could stop breathing. They could stand on one foot for days and weeks at a time without moving a limb. Sometimes they could live underwater. Sometimes they could live underground. We have seen yogis where they just put they bury themselves totally underground and just put a straw in their mouth coming up. And otherwise they're totally buried. You can't even see them. All you see is a little straw. And usually one of their disciples is standing next to them to make sure nobody pulls the straw. Because in India, anything could happen. Some little boy sees, oh, I can sell this straw. Somebody may step on it. Yes, or a crow may come and take it away. Very dangerous situation. Really, the yogi is just underground, and there's just about this much of a straw coming out from the ground. You don't even see him. And he just, I don't know how much he breathes, but he breathes. And they stay like that sometimes for days and days and days at a time. I didn't see, but maybe the disciple takes like a glass of juice every now and then. And they have one of those bendable straws where he's... But I don't think so. I don't think so. I think actually they don't have to eat for so many days. So these are very difficult austerities. But here is Yashoda Mai. This is the highest yoga, throwing a little baby in the air and catching it and laughing. Because it's an expression of pure, unadulterated love. And she's playing with Krishna in this way. And Krishna knows everything, even when he's a little baby, just playing that role so sweetly. Still, all the powers of God are there. In fact, it describes in the scriptures that when Krishna appears, all the avatars, all the expansions of the Lord, they all merge into his body. Narasingha Dev, Varaha Dev, Mahavishnu, Karanodakshayi Vishnu, Shiva, they are all present in Krishna's body. With all the powers and all the knowledge and all the everything. So Krishna understood that Kamsa had sent Asura, Trinavartasura, to come specifically to kill and eat Krishna. That was his motivation, to murder Krishna, then eat him. It was a Rakshasa. Very special type of prasad. Krishna's non-different than prasad. But this is how Rakshasas interpret it. So he was coming and Krishna understood. He knows everything. So what he did is Krishna became heavy in the arms of his mother because he didn't want Yashoda Mai to be inconvenienced or endangered by this asura coming to get him. Krishna knew that he could take care of the asura, but he didn't want to inconvenience his mother too much. So he became very heavy. He can be light as a piece of grass, or he could be heavier than a mountain. So she just, her feminine arms could no longer bear his weight. So she put him down in a very nice place and then chanted some mantras. And then she went to perform her household duties as a mother. At that time, Trinavarta assumed the form of a whirlwind. This windstorm was so acute that it raised dust and sand and created total darkness where absolutely no one could see anything. Not a single person could, or animal, or anyone, could even see the nearest part of their body. The darkness and the dust and the sand blowing around was so dense that literally everyone was blind. So Yashoda Mai, immediately, she's feeling this wind and she's seeing this is going to be such a devastating storm. And Krishna was just outside, laying on the little cushion. So her first mind was not her life. Her first thought was not her property. Her thought was Krishna. Her life, her soul, her everything was Krishna. her property, her life, everything else was only meant for Krishna. We understand the love of a mother for a child, the love of a father for a child. Multiply that infinitely, and you have the nature of Yashoda's love for Krishna. Because every baby has its lovable nature. But when your baby is Krishna, he has an infinitely lovable nature. His capacity to love and his capacity to be love is limitless. So Yashoda Mai, her love took the form of excruciating anxiety. Where is Krishna? This is something very dynamic. Love can take many forms, but when the love is spiritual, it brings ecstasy to the heart. Even anxiety brings ecstasy to the heart when it is toward the Supreme Lord. So Yashoda Mai, there was no way that she could find Krishna. She was running in circles. Where is Krishna? She was screaming out, calling out, has anyone seen Krishna? Where? How? It was total blindness. And meanwhile, Trinavarta, he picked up Krishna. Krishna was heavy for Yashoda, but he became like a little piece of grass, so light that Trinavarta just picked him up and went higher and higher and higher and higher into the sky. He kidnapped him. And for Krishna, anyone who takes shelter of Krishna becomes fearless. Bajahure mana srinandanandana abhaya charanaravindare. So Krishna is the source of all fearlessness. Just this little one-year-old baby is going higher and higher in the sky. He was laughing even more than when he was with Yashoda. Because Yashoda was only throwing him about this high. And, you know, within a few minutes, Trinavarta had him like 30,000 feet above sea level, you know. Higher than Air India can take you. And he went higher and higher and higher still. And for Krishna, you know, Mother Yashoda was giving him a taste of going high, so he wanted, well, you could, Mother, you could only throw me this high. I want to go higher. So Trinavarta, he didn't come to fulfill Krishna's desire, but Krishna had his desire right at the time when Trinavarta was going to come. So everything comes together so perfectly. So Krishna was way, way, way up. Now he's in outer space. And poor Yashoda, when he was way, way up, then the dust and everything started clearing, and she was looking everywhere for Krishna. She went to the spot where Krishna was placed. He was gone. And the gopis and Yashoda Mai were looking in every direction. Where possibly could a little boy who hadn't even learned how to walk yet? He was obviously taken away. So Yashoda Mai was weeping and crying in motherly love. Her child is gone. It was pitiable. Shukadev Goswami compares it to a cow that has just lost her calf. That example just gives the innocence of the expression. And for those of you who have ever taken care of cows in a close way, you will understand it really is a pitiable situation. I have seen on many occasions where a mother cow, She just loves her little calf so much. The mother gives birth, and the little calf... Calves, in many ways, are more advanced than humans. Because within a minute, the calf is jumping around. Yes? Takes us... I don't know this chronology of growing up, but what age does a child start walking? Somebody who's a mother, please say. Sachi Devi, you can say. Huh? What age did Gauranga Prabhu start walking? Eight months. Little by little, everything will be revealed. So 8 months, but calves, this is the same day that they're born, a few minutes later, they're walking around, they're kind of jumping. And the mother's licking and licking and licking and licking. And oh, there's so much affection there. And then the baby, the little calf dies. I've seen it. And oh, the mother, she's beside herself with grief. Just she's mooing in such a piteous way. It breaks your heart. She's crying, tears streaming down her furry face. And she just keeps licking the calf and licking the calf and trying to lick life back into the calf. So much affection. So Shukadev Goswami, he's comparing it to that. That a cow that loses the calf. Yashoda Mai was weeping and crying and she was falling unconscious. She couldn't bear. It was inconceivable that Krishna has been taken away. That little helpless baby. And all the other gopis came and they felt exactly the same sorrow as Yashoda. To see her in that state, because they loved Krishna too. They loved Krishna in very much the same way as Yashoda Mai. He was the child for everyone. And especially because they had that love for Krishna, they could really understand what Yashoda Mai was going through. And it was as unbearable to see Yashoda suffering like this as it was to feel what Yashoda was feeling. This is Paradukaduki on a very, very transcendental platform. The nature of a saintly person is Paradukaduki. The nature of being able to speak high things, being able to perform various mystical feats or accomplish great things is one thing. But deep down, what makes a person great is the quality of paradukaduki. And this we should focus on. And that is that another person's happiness is my happiness. And another person's suffering is my suffering. That is compassion, karuna ras. Love and compassion. So all the gopis, they were absolutely one with Yashoda in the sense that they shared her sorrow in such a deep way. They cared about her so much. They would do anything, everything, to alleviate her unhappiness.
And even in this world, you know, the mode of goodness, this is what makes people cultured. In most traditions, when someone dies, a loved one, be it a wife or husband or child or parent, there's a time of grieving. And in that time of grieving, family and friends and well-wishers come and share your sorrow with you. In almost every culture and every faith, there's a certain way that that is done. Or, you know, there may be some rituals, there may be some ceremonies, but really the purpose of it all is we're coming together to share your grief. Your grief is my grief. It's an act of love. Of course, these days people just go as a formality, just because they're supposed to go. They go to your house and say, I'm sorry. And as soon as they leave the house, they just go to a cinema or something. They enjoy a Bollywood movie. I don't know what they do. But this is for real, to share each other's grief. When someone's having difficulty, you know, if we're really a spiritual family, we should understand that that person's difficulty is everyone's difficulty. Together, we must try to help. That's Vaishnav society. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, Kala Krishna Das, he got in some trouble, some pretty serious trouble, actually. That nomadic tribe somehow or other seduced him to leave Lord Chaitanya to engage in, you know, inappropriate activities. So Lord Chaitanya rescued him and brought him back and protected him. But then when they came back to Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, look at what he did. Now he can go anywhere, but he cannot be with me. Because Lord Chaitanya wanted to set the standard that we have to take our responsibilities and our morality very seriously. So Lord Chaitanya banished him from his company. But then the whole family, the whole congregation of devotees came to try to help Kala Krishna Das, headed by Nityananda Prabhu, Swarup Damodar Goswami, all these people. We have to somehow or other help him. We have to honor Lord Chaitanya's example, but at the same time, we have to help him. Because they felt the same pain that he felt when he was rejected. So they gave him a beautiful service. Go to Navadvip and tell Sachi Devi and Advaita Prabhu and everyone else all about the leelas of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord in South India. So in this way, you know, everybody just crowded around him to hear about Lord Chaitanya's, because he was the only one who knew. So there was that genuine concern that your suffering is my suffering. And he actually had some problem. It was for real. But still, they all tried to help together. You know, they didn't say, oh, you did this to Lord Chaitanya? Out from here. I don't want to see your face. No. They were crying with him because he was basically sincere. So this is a family. You know, when we actually understand Radha and Gopinath as our mother and father and all their devotees as their family, then it's something that goes deep.
know, in a regular biological family, if somebody does something wrong, if it's a loving family, you know, whatever, they're there to help each other. It's not that because we're not biologically connected, that if somebody's a burden, we just dispose of them. They're a burden. Burden of love is a great opportunity. So this was Yashoda's and the gopis, that was their mood. Yashoda's suffering because of the loss of her child. So they were all suffering with her. They were all kind of crying like the mooing of cows that lost their calves. And this was the situation. Meanwhile, Krishna, he was having such a good time. He was just looking down at the scenery. And Trinavart was taking him higher and higher. And Krishna knew he's taking him up there to kill him. But Krishna, he was seeing the good. It's like the most incredible roller coaster ride ever made. But then, you know, Krishna understood the sorrow of Yashoda and all the other gopis. And he also understood the evil intent of Trinavarta. But he also was thinking that he's given me so much fun. Why should he continue in this demoniac mentality, in this demoniac? I will give him liberation. He's given me so much enjoyment, I will give him liberation. So Trinavarta was gigantic. And he was really a mystic yogi. Can you imagine having the power to make a dust storm like that by just twirling around? Any one of you, go ahead, twirl around. And see what the rest of us do. He went higher, 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 higher. It's gigantic. And Krishna was only like this big compared to him. He became heavy. Krishna doesn't have to grow to become heavy. He became as heavy as a planet. And he was only this big. And it's not that there was some sort of biological thing going on of the condensing of his cellular structures. No, he just... In the Bible, let there be light, and there's the sun. Let there be life, and there's life. Krishna, let me be heavy, and he was heavy. So Trinavarta couldn't... He couldn't... Oh, he was way up in the sky, and now he was about to fall down because Krishna was so heavy. So with all of his strength and power, he tried to tear Krishna and throw him away. But little Krishna, with his tiny little arms, he put around Trinavarta's neck and squeezed. And Trinavarta was choking. He was really choking. He couldn't breathe. With all of his power, he was trying to remove Krishna and throw him away. And Krishna was smiling, and he was laughing. He was still looking down at the scenery of from outer space. It just so nice. He was squeezing his neck every now and then just to give more effects to the pastime. Krishna's little tiny lotus soft feet would just give a little kick. And that little kick was like a massive nuclear bomb hitting him in the chest. That's what he felt like. And finally, Krishna just squeezed him so hard that Trinavarta lost his life. And then He came soaring down. And Krishna arranged it so he fell on a gigantic slab of rock. So his body just dislocated in every part. And he was massive, and Krishna was on his chest playing. And when all of us, can you imagine Yashoda Mai and the gopis, all of a sudden they're looking for Krishna. Where is he? They didn't know where he was. And all of a sudden, this massive asura lands on a rock from the sky. And Krishna's smiling and laughing. He's still can't even walk. He's crawling. And Yashoda Mai and the gopis, they run and they get Krishna, and Mother Yashoda's embracing him and kissing him and feeding him milk from her own body. And she's thinking that the Supreme Lord has saved our helpless, innocent little son. And that's the way everyone's thinking. Narayan is so merciful because Krishna is so innocent and so pure. The Supreme Lord has protected him. So there's no other explanation. Situation like that, you can't just say it was his good luck. It's the grace of God. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then they started performing all these little rituals to protect Krishna in case there was any negative influence due to the astrological situation or anything else, to somehow or other, you know, cleanse Krishna of those influences. Srila Prabhupada, he said when he was a little child, his mother would do so many things to protect him. And he said she didn't even know what she was doing. What to speak of him? You know, she would draw things on him and to protect him from influences. You know, Bengali mothers, what to do. But it's an expression of love. It's not so much, you know, what is done. It's the love that's important. Love is not always logical. Love is not always rational. Love is, spiritual love is beyond ration and logic. We need sound philosophical ration and logic to come to that state. But once we reach that state, it's so much deeper. It's so far beyond. It's inconceivable, achintya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains how this Trinavarta represents being proud of material scholarship. And that could also be scholarship of scriptures. Material means when there's pride. When there's false pride, it's material. The difference between spiritual and material really is the difference between with false ego or without false ego. When false ego comes in, ahankar, it makes something material. When false ego is not there, then it's spiritual. If we use something without ego for the pleasure of God, that's spiritual. So pride of scholarship. It makes us think that we're going higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. That's the way the ego is. It makes us think that we're above others. And then we look down, condescending upon others. And whether we do it because of wealth or beauty or a high birth or knowledge, that pride corrupts our ability to connect with God. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribhir. Queen Kunti prays that there are four primary disqualifications for knowing and loving Krishna. To have physical beauty, to have wealth, much wealth, to have high education, or to come from a very prestigious family, high birth. Because Krishna is akinchana gocharam. Krishna is the property of those who feel that they have nothing. It doesn't mean you have nothing. It means you recognize that ultimately everything is the grace of Krishna. And we don't become proud. Having education or beauty or high birth or wealth in itself is not at all a disqualification. But the pride that you could be infected by having these things, that is the greatest disqualification. Because when we're proud, we think ourselves superior to others. When we're proud, then we have expectations. Expectations of how I should be treated. Of what facilities should be given to me. And we think we have rights over other people. Pride is so deep. It is so subtle. It is so corrupting. We see in the world, in history, the whole conception of religion is to break you free from pride so that you could humble yourself before God and love God. But the ego is so deceiving that it'll take the very system and make you proud. Yes? I am a devotee of Krishna. Therefore, I am superior to so many other people. If you start thinking yourself superior to common people or people from other religions, then you're just feeding your pride. And then naturally, inevitably, you're going to start feeling yourself better than other devotees. Pride is, ego is ego. Once we let it go its way. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explained what a devotee actually is. Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Das Anudas. A real devotee feels herself, himself, to be servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. We should be grateful to understand the highness and the greatness of what we have received. It's not that we just, well, whatever anyone wants to say is as good as anything else. That's not what we mean by humility. What we were given in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most inclusive, most powerful, most intimate spiritual knowledge. And we're grateful that we received it by Srila Prabhupada's grace. But it doesn't make us proud, it makes us humble. It's not about me. It's about the grace of Krishna. It's about the grace of the Lord. And therefore, we actually, if we really feel that, then Srila Prabhupada said, if you're actually a devotee, you'll be a perfect lady, perfect gentleman. Srila Prabhupada honored and respected every type of person. When Prabhupada was living in the Bowery, he was the only person alive that was offering honor and respect to the drunkards and the alcoholics and the people who were homeless living in the street. He treated them with dignity and integrity and they could feel it. He had nothing to give them as far as, because he didn't have any more money than they did. But when he would come to his house, they would jump up, you know, they would lay in the street, and then they'd see Prabhupada coming, and they'd jump up and open the door for him. Because they honored him so much. This is a man that cares. The only person alive who acknowledges their existence and respects them. And he's a scholar, he's a saint. He's coming from Vrindavan. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada was very heavily defeated wrong philosophies, but he did it with love and respect. So Kunti is explaining that high education, high beauty, high birth, high wealth can intoxicate a person with false pride. Where we think I have special privileges and you don't. I am above you. In other words, we're thinking, according to this analogy, I am Trinavarta. You should recognize that. When you think yourself better than someone, you should understand I am taking the role of Trinavarta, that mentality. I'm higher than you. But Trinavarta was higher only by material things. Yashodamai was down on the ground. She didn't have any of these powers. But she was higher. She was infinitely higher than Trinavarta. Because she had no false ego. She simply loved Krishna. So somehow or other, we have to kill this false ego by purifying it. Ultimately, we don't want to kill our ego. We want to transform it from false ego to real ego. From being proud of our own selfish due to some deep, deep insecure need to being proud of Krishna. And being proud that I'm a child of Krishna. But then that doesn't make you better than anyone else because everybody else is a child of Krishna too. So when we infinitely feel the glory and the beauty and the love of being a child of Krishna and the happiness there, then it doesn't make us proud because we see mamaivam so jiva loke. Everybody's a child of Krishna. When you have inner fulfillment, you don't have to be better than others. This is a mundane conception. We have this yearning, this longing, I have to be better than others. But in the spiritual world, everyone is unique. It's not that it's just a boring blur of everyone's the same. Yes? Everyone is unique. And Krishna's love for you and me is unique. It's special. It's intimate. And it's something that we're just so grateful. We're so happy with. But we should understand that that same uniqueness is inherently in everyone's relationship with Krishna. So we don't have to do better. We don't have to be better. We're all one. But at the same time, there's infinite variegatedness within that oneness. We don't have to prove anything to anyone because we're feeling God, we're feeling Krishna's presence accepting our love, accepting our service. There's nothing to prove. We just express that love with humility, with devotion. So how do we transform false ego to real ego? From material to spiritual? Simply by connecting it to Krishna, connecting it to God. Om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopiva.
Krishna is all pure. If we just connect with Krishna, we become purified.
And in this age of Kali, the simplest, most powerful way of connecting with Krishna and becoming purified is chanting the holy name. And it's interesting how when we chant Krishna's name, you know, as we chant, Krishna's in our throat, yes?
Hare Krishna, Krishna's
resounding. That sound vibration is in our throat, it's in our tongue, it's in our mouth. So just like Janavarta, we just keep Krishna tight. Krishna was tightly squeezing Trinavarta's throat, and in the process he killed Trinavarta's ego, and became the illusory ego of Trinavarta, his mundane self, crashed down to the ground, and his soul was liberated. So if we somehow or other, just by, if we chant with sincere feeling, Trinadapi Sunichena Taror Ivasahishnana, then Krishna will be so happy, he'll just hold on to us. And ultimately, the ego will come crashing down and the soul will be liberated. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, Radhe Shyam.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, sometimes when people say that you know, they are taking training from me, for example, they are connected to me, and they don't follow properly, and then they bring bad name to me or to Pune, then sometimes I feel that, I feel upset, you know, with that, why they claim their connection to me while not following what I tell them to follow, you know. So is it also a type of material ego, or this... Is it a sense of responsibility? I'm not very sure about that.
It must be a sense of responsibility. We should see that these types of situations, although unfortunate, see it as Krishna's way of trying to help you to really come more and more above the false ego. What's important is to make sure that we don't have ulterior motives, we are not mistreating people, we're really trying to do the best we can. And even if you do the absolute best you can, still people will blame you and people will criticize you, because that's the nature of the world. And we should hear it to see if there's some truth, that I'm doing something wrong, that I'm making some mistake. If there is, we should rectify it. And even if there is, we should rectify it, but we shouldn't become depressed, because life is about learning. But if it's an exaggeration that's beyond moral limits of how people are criticizing and condemning, because oftentimes people do it not because of what you've done, but because of who they are. You know, sometimes people just have certain insecurities, or they have certain envy, or they have certain mental issues, social issues. And, you know, it makes you look really good in your own ego if you're going to criticize somebody. Criticize somebody in a high position. It makes the ego think that, just see my power, I can criticize that person. What does that make me if I could criticize that person? Yes, sometimes people have to, that's where they're at. So we can try to, you know, serve the best way we possibly can. And when those things happen beyond our own limitations, then we should see it as a blessing. It's meant to help me become more detached. And we take shelter of Krishna in that situation. Does that answer your question? Hari Hari. Is there another question? Huh? You have one more.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, today in your class one very important point you were saying that one should not have a feeling of superiority over others. Sometimes even when we do good to someone by making an effort to rectify their anartha, and after it is done, and in case they get better also, sometimes one problem is that sense of superiority, which is an anartha that may come in my heart. And another one is the traces of anartha in the other person, you know, which may still be lingering. And the old impression that I have about them, you know, the old perception. How do we erase it? Because that is only known to me when I am handling a person, you know, and it is a confidential thing which we cannot tell others. So I help an individual to rectify him, get rid of a fault. And after it is done, either it is still lingering in that person or my perception of that individual makes me not respect him so much, you know, after I know his deficiency. So how do I get rid of that? Because he has already improved and he has come up. Still the old impressions are still there. So how do I get rid of it? And also how do I not feel a sense of superiority that I have helped him, you know? Because I feel both of these are very dangerous and detrimental, leading to pride.
Just be honest. If you are feeling yourself superior to someone because of that instance that you explain, then that in and of itself reveals your own limitation, your own defect. So just seeing that ego in yourself should humble you. Yes? The mind is like a restless child, and the intelligence is meant to be like a loving mother. So the restless child is naturally going to go in so many places to get in trouble and to endanger himself. But the loving mother is always there to bring the child back to the right place. So similarly, the mind's nature is like that, to find fault, to be egoistic, so many things, to want to enjoy this, to want to be averse to that. But the intelligence, like a mother, has to keep yato yato nishchalate manas chanchalamashtaram. The Gita says, wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, we must bring it back to that safe place. And that's the function of the intelligence. When the intelligence is nourished by the power of spiritual knowledge and grace, then it can modify and give proper interpretation to the wanderings of the mind. Because all these things are so superficial and temporary. You know, a person may have some difficulty. And a person may confide in you. This is what you're saying. And then you could help the person come out of it. And then you're thinking this person has this difficulty. And you're making judgments of them. But this person, you know, if he's overcoming his difficulty by the end of this life, this person can go back home, back to Godhead. And you might, you know, take another birth because you think you're better than him. Huh? So we have to try to see the whole picture. Bhakti is a powerful process. That's why Lord Chaitanya, very powerful statement. We have to apply this on our own lives, amongst each other. What did Jagai and Madhai do? How would you like Jagai and Madhai to confess what they were going through? Huh? Even Yamaraj couldn't handle it. So if your Jagai and Madhai would have said, this is my problems. Then you would really have something to be judgmental about. But after they chanted the names of God and humbled themselves and accepted the path of pure bhakti, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told all the devotees, never think of Jagai and Madhai due to their past defects. Now they're with us. They're one of us. Jagai and Madhai were dancing with the devotees in kirtan so intimately that they were crashing into Lord Chaitanya and everybody else. They were in such happiness. So Lord Chaitanya said like this, never think of them for what they were. Think of them for who they are. So if somebody's rectifying themselves, it's not our position to think of what they... We could think of what they were, not to judge the person, but rather to appreciate. This person was like that, and now like this. To come out from that into this, it's actually a glorification. It's an appreciation. And a person still suffering due to their problems and their anarthas, we should do everything we can to help. We should do everything we can to protect other people from being influenced by that. But we should do it in a spirit of service. And we should know. I mean, I've seen some of my god brothers who went quite deep into Maya due to previous conditionings. But because somehow or other they did nice service. You know, they got some situation came where at the end of their life they just totally became humble and surrendered to Krishna and definitely went back home, back to Godhead. So I may not have those difficulties, but I may not surrender like they do and go back to Godhead. That's the way we should be feeling. Even if a person's having difficulty, we have to protect ourselves from that. We have to protect others from that influence. We have to try to protect them from that influence. But at the same time, we should understand that this person, you know, at any moment, he has a right to surrender and become perfect. And he just might. And this difficulty might just be the thing that really helps him to do it. Does that answer your question? So we have to try to see the large picture of things. We have to deal with the small picture. But real leadership is we deal effectively, comprehensively with the small picture of things, but we always see it in context of the big picture. And we have to balance the two. So I think we should end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.